Ramping up your business? The time is near. You've given it heart. Now get it in gear. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
I'm Richard Gearhart, founder of Gearhart Law, a full-service intellectual property law firm specializing in patents, trademarks, and copyrights.
And I'm Elizabeth Gearhart, not an attorney, but I do marketing for Gearhart Law, and I am the founder of Gear Media Studios, a content creation studio with the focus on podcasting.
Welcome to Passage to Profit, the road to entrepreneurship, where we talk with entrepreneurs and celebrities about their business journeys. So now we're on to our main guest interview. He's Arthur Kapoor, a bold entrepreneur who once walked away from a thriving corporate career to prove the health industry could and should do better. His unfiltered approach to innovation has sparked both admiration and controversy and shaked up the entrenched systems along the way. So Arthur, let me ask, you've taken some bold risks in your career. What is one that people thought was crazy but paid off?
One of them was that somebody asked me that, what do you know about healthcare, when I got into healthcare? And I said, I think I'm just following the scent of money. And they said, how do you follow scent of money? I said, well, if there are 500 people make a living out of that business, whichever business we are looking at, I think it's good enough for me to follow through. And I said, but I will not follow it the way other people are following it. I want to follow the way where does the money trail end up at? So I want to be that source which will control that money flow.
So how does that philosophy outlook work itself into a business strategy?
Typically, when I entered, or I was kind of looking for my next venture, I had sold a company which was in furniture. And next thing I was looking at people billing from home. There would be ads in the newspaper and saying you can bill from home and make hundreds and $100,000, $200,000. I said, that's a pretty good business. So I went and attended all those shows where people would come and talk about it. And then I would have asked them a question, where do you send these? So they said, you would go to a doctor's office, pick up the super bills, and come back and bill it on the computer. And then you send it to the clearinghouse, and the clearinghouse will send it on to the insurance companies for it to be paid. So instead of paper claims, now these are electronic claims, right? That was the business. So for me at that point, issue was, I didn't want to be another guy going picking up super bills from a doctor's office. I said, let me find out, where do these claims go to? So there was one clearinghouse, which was a national clearinghouse. I went to them and I said, how do I submit claims to you? They said, well, these are our formats and you can submit to us. Well, that was just an idea. I eventually became a competitor to that clearinghouse. And we became probably one of the largest clearinghouses on the Eastern Seaboard. So I competed with that.
Amazing. And how did you grow so fast? Did you improve the processes? Did you use
software? Yeah, so our biggest thing at that point was, everybody used to do an old-fashioned way. We came up with a technology where if you could send a paper claim to be printed on a dot matrix printer, I'm talking about now. I'm going back.
Dot matrix.
Wow. That's going back. These are going back. So there was no laser. It was dot matrix. Okay? You had to put the spool in and all. If you could take it, so we put a low TSR software, which would capture the entire image of the claim from that printer, bring it into the database, and lay it out, and exactly the entire claim would be on a kind of a software. And that software was built by us. And now we could edit those claims and then submit them electronically. So nobody had ever done anything being taken from a printer to be put into the system. And so we were ahead of OCR, I'm talking about way back in 89.
So what gave you the courage to jump from office furniture to medical billing when you didn't have any experience in that?
One of the things I've always seen is that industry, you have to look at industry. If there's an industry which is always very profitable and there's a lot of chaos, any industry you want to get into or what you want to make money, there has to be chaos. If there's no chaos and everything is very copacetic, then nothing you can do. If there's chaos, get into it, because you can always come up with an idea to make money.
So are there any industries right now that you would consider very chaotic?
Just about all of them, right?
I think it's, everything is chaotic. I think healthcare is very chaotic. Mm-hmm. It always has been. I personally think banking has been chaotic. There are many other ways to leverage other things to make more efficient. But I think there are other industries, last mile deliveries, that are very chaotic. So there's a lot of things that are going on, especially now with AI coming in. It's going to be much more chaotic than you can think of.
So what made you take an entrepreneurial route as opposed to stay on the corporate side? I mean, were you attracted to entrepreneurism? Because you could have been probably very successful just climbing the corporate ladder, right?
I'm not a guy who can work in a corporation. I have to make decisions, and I can't be told, okay, if this is not the policy, we have to do it. Because if you want to be a successful entrepreneur, according to what I've seen, you really need to go way beyond what people can imagine to be. And you have to, A, work hard, B, got to come up with something. It's got to be a better mousetrap than anybody else out there. Now, can you come up with a mousetrap every time? No, but you can come up with a mousetrap sometimes.
But in terms of, okay, so there's always this debate, right? Is it the idea or is it the team or the individual? What do you think is the most important factor there?
I think it's an idea, but team is very important, because if you don't have the right team, which doesn't think or is in sync with you, you can never build a company. So building a company needs a good team, and that team is the key.
And what kind of culture did you strive to create with the companies that you built?
Culture is always one of the things that, you know, you ask that question about people. People would come to me and they had crazy ideas. And I would always listen to them. And I would say, there is always one thing that you can find in every thought process. And I learned my lesson. There was one person who came to me one time and he said that there was a great idea. And I told him, I said, I don't think this is going to work. Well, the guy resigned 2 days later and he set up a shop later on and he became successful. So I've learned my lesson that don't shut people down, because you got to be open to them, because they have ideas that maybe worth it to take a look at it.
You're very innovative, but these industries you're working in are highly regulated. Like if you try to do innovations in the medical industry, try to do innovations in the financial industry, how do you marry innovation to regulation?
I think there's a fine balance. Regulation is when people talk about healthcare, they say, oh, your data has to be protected and, you know, it's got to be HIPAA, this, that. Now, those are basic things that you cannot do anything without. So you got to work with the premise that you have HIPAA, you know, part of the whole thing. But what you should always realize is every time you try to innovate, you have to come up with a better way of doing things. Like, for example, I'll tell you, today people are saying to me that, you know, you've done this, why can't you help these states bring the cost down of healthcare? So what do? I will tell them, for every state, I would tell them, their governors and their staff, how do you bring the cost down? Because, and I'll do it free of cost, because I want to tell them that that's where the problem is. But I do say, if you feel that I will save you X amount of dollars, then I do need my percentage from that. So,
And how do they react to that? Are they
They're very open to it, because, listen, you go to a state and you save them $400 million, no governor is going to come back and tell you, I'm sorry, that's not a good idea.
Well, there might be some, but, you know.
I do want to go back to HIPAA for a minute, because as you and I talked about before the show, I heard a radiologist speaking about how they're using AI, and people's data is getting fed to these AI engines sometimes, and hopefully they're not putting your name with like your cancer screening or whatever that's going into an AI database. Is that even possible with HIPAA to have everybody's medical data going into AI and into databases?
I think we're using the word AI very loosely. So, you know, when you talk about especially factors about diagnosis, you talk about conditions, and you talk about, then you connect it to the name, Social Security. A lot of those things are all encrypted. So even engine of AI has to take the data, decrypt it, and then lay it out. So listen, there will always be people who will try to break, we have seen this in cyberspace. People have come in and they've broken down the companies they've gotten in. There'll always be people doing it. But I think overall, what I'm seeing now, healthcare companies are becoming very proficient in saving their own data, because they have learned that it was easy to leave some doors open and people used to come in. So to answer your question, radiology is one example where a lot of those things are still very, because of images and that kind of stuff. But to connect an image to a person and to the Social Security, it's going to be not that simple. So what they do is they can maintain different file systems for okay. different things. So it's only one layer where it'll all come out clear. So if you decrypt it, yes, you can cause damage. But if you encrypt it, you're okay.
So healthcare is a big topic right now. Everybody is concerned about the cost of healthcare, but we all want good healthcare. What types of things would you do to improve the delivery of healthcare and reduce the cost, make it more affordable?
The first thing is that you have to really look at decision support, which is to make the life of a physician better, which is to give him or her the support that they can make decisions on you, which is your you're there as a patient, so that you can take benefit from what they might have missed out. So AI will come in and help physicians from that perspective. But how do you control the cost? The healthcare system today is a high expensive item because people have not been watching the dollars. States give major contracts to companies who are just kind of building an old product, and that product needs a lot of Band-Aids, and they keep spending more money on it. So the way to do it is you have to make it lean and mean, deploy the best of the latest technologies, and make sure that people who are using it are benefiting from it, and the patient at the end of it, just like us, we take advantage of what AI will bring to it.
Do you think more regulation is the answer?
No, less regulation. Because what you need to do is, right now, everything is regulated to the point that you cannot even breathe anymore. So what they have to do is they have to loosen the guidelines, but make it such that physicians care about the quality more than the money that they're making. So it's a fine balance. Right now, states are not thinking like that. States are only thinking about, how do I manage my balance, my budget? But there might be a different way to look at it, which could be that if I'm spending $1.8 billion, I'm just saying, on healthcare today, maybe I can bring it down to $1.2 billion. Just humor me on that. If that $600 million can be saved in implementing things which were not required before, and now it can improve.
So can you give an example of that?
Yeah, so you might be taking statin, but statins could end up making it such that you mess up your kidneys. And if that happens, were you watching out for ESRD, which is an early stage renal disease, or no? And if you didn't, maybe there'll be a problem later on. Yeah. So, I'm just giving an example that it could be anything like this. Yeah. So if you follow a guideline, a clinical guideline, sometimes you got to go beyond it and say, let me do something different.
Arthur Kapoor, visionary entrepreneur. We have to take a commercial break. I just want to mention that you can experience the Passage to Profit show by subscribing to us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or you can subscribe to our podcast anywhere that you get your podcast. Just look for the Passage to Profit show on any podcast platform. Back with more from Arthur right after this.
Attention investors. This is a simple commercial on the investment value of gold. Gold continues to make new highs. In good markets and in bad markets, you need to have your portfolio balanced with gold. Learn about owning physical gold or getting a gold-backed IRA. Make this simple call right now.
800-653-2073. 800-653-2073. That's 800-653-2073.
Sponsored by Reagan Gold. We're offering a 100% risk-free gold guide. Gold continues to make new highs. And unlike stocks, gold has never been worth zero. You owe it to your nest egg and future to own some physical gold or set up a gold-backed IRA. Call right now for your free report.
800-653-2073. 800-653-2073. That's 800-653-2073.
Sponsored by Reagan Gold.
Do you love going on a cruise, or have you always dreamt on going on the cruise vacation of your life? With dozens of cruise companies, who do you call to find the right vacation and deal for you? Now you can make one phone call and shop all the best deals on every single cruise line in the world. You can't get that by calling one cruise line. We have them all, with experts that know the ins and outs of every cruise ship and can tell you the best cruise for your vacation needs. Our cruise packages start at $149. Plus, we offer free internet, free guest packages, and cash back deals. So now is your chance to book the cruise of your lifetime. Call the cruise hotline right now and shop every single cruise line in the world. Here's the number. 800-577-4742. 800-577-4742. 800-577-4742. That's 800-577-4742.
Now back to Passage to Profit. Once again, Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
And our special guest, Arthur Kapoor. We've been having a great discussion, and we're going to continue it now.
Arthur, during the break, we were talking about sort of how you got an early start and some of the challenges that you faced as a young man making his way in the business world. Tell us a little bit about what happened when you first left school.
Richard, this was very interesting because I left school and I thought I'm going to be good for the corporate market. And I go in the corporate market and everybody kind of took my resume and said, oh, either you're overqualified or underqualified. So I never got a job. So I was trying to make my ends meet. I was trying to write some business plans for SBA, SBDC. You know, I used to get paid based on writing a business plan. And in one of those business plans, there was a client who had an issue with their profits being taken away. And, you know, their revenue was pretty high. But so I ended up writing a business plan for this client. And in that process, one day my director called me and she said that they are here to meet with you. And I'm like, what happened? Did I do something wrong? So it was one of those things that I met with the folks and they said, well, we want you to come and implement this business plan. And I said, I really have no idea how, you know, office furniture is. Mm-hmm. So they said, well, if you wrote the business plan, you should know this. So I ended up working there. I was a consultant, kind of. They brought me in. I had no idea. I was very young. And then only to find out that I got down to the bare brass tacks and found out where the problems were. Everybody was happy. And there were three other business salespeople who were leaving that company. And they asked me to join them as a partner. I had no money. So I said, I don't have money to invest. They said, well, you know, your sweat capital is good. And that's when I left that company and I embarked on my journey as an entrepreneur. That was my first business. And I was only 26 years old then. Wow. So I was like, I guess I was like, okay, I'm going to take the risk.
So were your parents entrepreneurs? Did you have entrepreneurs in your family?
No, none. None of my family. My father was a scientist, so he never, you know, was only, so I was only, I think I'm the black sheep in the family.
Well, I mean, we were talking on the phone during our pre-call, and I kind of grew up in the generation where a successful career was climbing your way to the top of a corporate ladder, and, you know, being an entrepreneur is like, well, what's that, you know, and what do you do? And, you know, it turned out that going entrepreneurial was really one of the best decisions that I ever made. I have to thank my wife, Elizabeth, for encouraging me and supporting me on that. But it really does change your perspective on business. And I feel like I've grown a lot as an entrepreneur. I've had to acquire a lot of new skills and develop capabilities that I don't think I would have ever gotten in the corporate world. And I'm the same way. I mean, I can follow direction, but if it's stupid direction, then it just frustrates me to no end. So I think I'm probably better off on my own. So.
Also, you have to remember, as an entrepreneur, you are responsible for the success of the company or the failure of the company. So it's a very big risk that you take. But if you do have inbuilt asset, which is about how do I recognize how to make profit or how do I recognize that I can make this idea hum and this idea make much more money, you should be an entrepreneur. Because otherwise, you work in a corporate life, you'll get a bonus check, and that'll be the end of it. Now, as an entrepreneur, your ability to make money is a lot more, and you should also, every 2 weeks, you need to be worried about how you make your payroll. So, you know, it comes with the pluses and minuses. But listen, at the end of the day, if you're an entrepreneur, you are master of your own universe. You set your own clock.
Well, we talk about the freedoms that entrepreneurs have. You get to associate with the people that you want to associate with. You have freedom of income. You have freedom to decide how you want to spend your time. And you have freedom to pursue the projects that are important or meaningful to you. But the freedom comes at a cost. I mean, there are times when things just really stunk, you know, and it was a real struggle to keep things going. And there were times that our backs were against the wall. And somehow, some way, we managed to, you know, to figure it out and keep the ship going, you know. And it really, let me ask you, in your companies, have you ever felt like entirely comfortable that the company was going to continue on? Or did you ever have a concern that something might change at any moment and that you would have to react to it?
You know, if you're an entrepreneur, Richard, you should be always prepared that something can change. Anything can happen. It's never the same. You know, you could be humming along pretty good. You're doing very well. And suddenly one of your clients calls you and says, okay, we're ending the contract because we found another vendor, or we don't have the money, or whatever it might be. So you can never underestimate that things can go wrong. So things can always go wrong. But as an entrepreneur, your biggest thing is you have the ability to pivot and be quicker, because if you can't do that, you won't be an entrepreneur. So if you can pivot and find a way, okay, this is my downtime. This is what has happened to me. Can I come out of it? How do I come out of it? Those are the things that you always think about.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, having a positive attitude is important too. So
I do too. So you jumped into brand new industries that you really hadn't worked in. Do you think people need to work in the industry to learn it before they jump in as an entrepreneur? Or do you think you can just learn it on the job, so to speak?
So there are two traits of an entrepreneur. One is a trait of an entrepreneur who is very good at what they do. They've learned it and then they want to start a business. That's different. There's another trait of entrepreneur, which is gutsy entrepreneur who gets into something but makes a better mousetrap than anybody else. So there are two types. So you have to always remember, the one, the gutsy one, is the one who says, I'm not happy with what I have right now. I want to make it better. Mm-hmm. And they review the whole marketplace. They look at your competition. They do everything. They say, let me make something which is better than all my competition, and people will come to me. And that is true. If they make a product or a platform where people will come, they're out of the game. And that's what happens.
That's great. So we're going to wind up this segment. Arthur, where can people find you if they want to contact you?
They can look at www.elegenthealth.com. It's a company which is doing all care management for many states now, and they're working on it.
Well, congratulations. We know it's going to be successful. You've got a great website, and certainly anybody who is interested in improving their understanding of their hospital's data should definitely reach out and investigate. So,
Passage to Profit is a nationally syndicated radio show appearing in 38 markets across the United States. In addition, Passage to Profit has also been recently selected by FeedSpot Podcasters Database as a top 10 entrepreneur interview podcast. Thank you to the P2P team, our producer Noah Fleischman, and our program coordinator Alicia Morrissey, our studio assistant Rissakat Busari, and our social media powerhouse Carolina Tabares. Look for our podcast tomorrow anywhere you get your podcasts. Our podcast is ranked in the top 3% globally. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, and on our YouTube channel. And remember, while the information on this program is believed to be correct, never take a legal step without checking with your legal professional first. Gearhart Law is here for your patent, trademark, and copyright needs. You can find us at gearhartlaw.com and contact us for a free consultation. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.